Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 104.
This week on the podcast, we lead with two stories we're thrilled to not have to lead with because of irony.
And Republicans are so enraged by Obamacare's 7 million enrollees that they accidentally vote on a coverage expansion law.
Get out your checkbook. Free speech is now entirely purchasable.
And Americans won't stand for zero troop deaths abroad in March and start shooting at their favorite murder rampage spot, Fort Hood.
Climate change is coming for you when you most expect it, which is now.
And the U.S. is now officially out of government overthrow ideas after failing at Cuban Twitter warfare.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and today we have a special guest with us. My mom is here.
Yes.
Please welcome Carla.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you for coming on the podcast and sitting and talking about the Malaysia flight with us.
Right.
For a few hours.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to do that because there's not really anything to report. Thankfully, both Ukraine and Malaysia are very quiet this week.
Right.
There was really nothing newsworthy, like nothing noteworthy going on with Ukraine.
No. We could have dug something up.
I'm sure.
But
we didn't want it.
Why bother?
Because we're bored of that.
Screw it.
The Malaysia flight had just debacles.
Right.
It's like we're knowing less every week about the Malaysia flight.
There's two potential black boxes right now, 300 miles apart in the Indian Ocean.
So
only one of them
What we've
might
narrowed
be
it down to is the plane might be anywhere in the Indian Ocean.
Or neither of them could be.
Or nowhere.
We don't know.
Or it's landed safely on an island in the Seychelles. And
or it's in North Korea.
Or it's in North Korea,
right, exactly.
Which is my favorite theory so far, and I hope everyone's safe, but I hope that that's the one.
Well, because then Dennis Rodman can go.
Right, then we have Dennis Rodman diplomacy,
whatever.
Which is what we should always be out for when you really get down to
but
it.
But isn't he in rehab right now, though, I think?
They're drawing it out until they can, until such a time that they can send Dennis Rodman to North Korea.
Yeah.
But the best news of the week, and the news that we reported widely, if you follow us on social media, which you should, is that we reached 7 million.
Yes.
We did it, guys.
Yes, we did. And we sort of, remember last week when we just, on a wing and a prayer and our hunch and gut feeling, said that it was going to happen?
Yeah.
We were right.
Yeah, we were right.
Unlike the Republicans in 2012, which is who we were comparing ourselves
exactly.
to last week, we were correct.
Yeah.
Because
we're the kind of people that can be trusted with gut feelings. That's why.
Exactly. Right.
7 million. We reached 7 million. I think the day before the deadline.
Yeah.
They released the numbers a day after. So.
And it's going to be higher actually because they extended the period for anybody who had sort of tried to sign up. So it's going to be higher than that.
Yeah. So when everyone tied themselves to that 7 million figure and then looked like fools when no one could sign up for anything for a month. They now feel like heroes.
Right. Well, for a long time, nobody even thought that they revised the number to 6 million, and nobody even thought that they could get to that.
Yeah.
Like, up until probably about a month ago.
Yeah. Then it turned out that at the last minute, people were signing up for healthcare, as everyone said that they would.
Yeah.
And then there were also, there's 3 million new people on Medicaid, too.
Right.
So,
And that doesn't even, that's up through the end of February.
Because
that
doesn't include March's numbers, which is when you would think that a lot would go on.
Right, exactly.
But that's 10 million people so far that we have counted.
Right, and that doesn't include all of the people who signed up off the exchange. And there's no great way to count that,
as Charles Gaba taught us. It could be anywhere from a zillion
to 400,000 to 10 million, basically. Right. Because we don't know what people
anyone
signed up,
we can't know what people were doing that, were doing stuff on their own.
Right.
People acting independently can never be really accurately counted.
Right.
We cut a good amount into that uninsured figure in the last few months.
I think that, and it's what you and I have always been saying, and people who are proponents of the bill, is that, there's still a lot of Republican talking points that are sort of fair at this point, in the sense that we don't know how many of those people paid, we don't know how many of those people were uninsured previously. There are a lot of things that we don't know, but what we do know is that people want healthcare.
Right.
I think if that 7 million
that's
number...
That's almost enough.
If that 7 million number proves anything, is that, the thing could potentially work.
Yeah.
Which was...
Or that there was interest in having a plan.
Right. And we didn't even... We didn't know any of those things until recently.
No.
So I think that that's a good reason for celebration.
Except we always knew it was going to work because it's what people need and want.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. People want it. We now know what I think we had no figures to support.
Sure.
But knew before.
Right. Generically, we could have known that people were sort of interested in having healthcare. Right. Yeah.
But this is powerful
because now we can prove
we have numbers now.
Yeah, exactly.
We have like no and I mean, I think that I had always wondered if that 7 million figure was intended to be like dramatically overshot or something, because I was sort
of
like,
I don't know.
I was like, where did they come up with that number? And why would they release the number if they weren't going to beat it? Right. Like, there's no reason to release a number.
Right. Well, I think it was a CBO number,
right? It was a CBO number.
Yeah.
But they all jumped on it. They weren't like, well, this number is ridiculous. No, when they didn't not comment on it, they were like, yes. That's how we'll know.
Right.
When 7 million people sign up, then we'll know we've succeeded.
Yeah.
Until then, we won't know. 6.5 million people getting health insurance is not a success, but no, 7 million.
7 is.
Yeah. But of course, the GOP is sort of busily trying to think of clever ways now to get rid of it. But I think they basically have realized that until 2017, they're not going to repeal the law.
Yeah.
They can keep holding those dumb votes, but they're not going
to
actually.
Well, by 2017, there's no hope for them to repeal
No. This is a way. They're passing the buck now because at this point, they're like, okay, well, we now have tied ourselves to the idea of repealing the law, so we have to do that.
Right.
We have to act like we're still interested in that. We're not, because it's a losing strategy that in two years everyone is going to want to string us up for. So we're going to talk about doing it in the future so that we don't have to actually do anything right now. And we can, in the future, be like, well, people like the law. Why would we want to get rid of the law?
Yeah.
So instead, they're sort of coming up with ways to make the law work for them.
Yeah. Well, and also I think it's, you know, it's sort of, their main talking points were that the thing wasn't going to work and that people weren't signing up for it and there wasn't interest for it. And that you're already sort of like starting to see them reaching, basically. Like, you know, it was funny. They on Meet the Press this morning, they played a commercial for whoever the Republican Senate candidate is in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. That's a seat that they're hoping that they're going to pick up because that's a Democratic senator and it's in Arkansas. So they figure that they can probably get that one.
Right.
But it was a commercial with a family sort of like talking about like how they're confused about what the law is.
Yeah, that's their like, refrain is that everyone's really confused.
Right. Like, and once that's sort of like the only argument that you're hanging your hat on, it's
like,
sort of
like,
that
can be fixed with information.
Exactly.
That's an easy fix.
So, I mean, I think that you're already sort of like starting to see them sort of like just, you know, claw for any sort of like thing that they can, you know, maybe rag on the thing for. And it's
yeah. That's, well, that's when at you the know, same time, they're having to sort of like cooperate to some degree with the law. They're, you know, they passed this, it's being termed an expansion. It's not really an expansion.
Right.
But it's something basically where small businesses had caps that were on, you know, for the plans that they could offer, there were capped deductibles so that they could only offer plans that, you know, that had deductibles of $4,000 or less or $2,000 or less, that sort of thing. They wanted to make it so that you didn't have to cap the deductibles so they could offer, you know, so that small businesses could offer their employees plans that didn't provide any sort of coverage whatsoever.
Right.
And so instead of just their sort of like repealing refrain, they have decided to sort of work with more nuts and bolts legislation. They, in this case in particular, pass a law that, you know, and this, by the way, for big businesses and for individual plans, there isn't a cap on the deductibles. So this was just affecting small businesses. But they waived it. They had already waived it till 2015. They got rid of the cap entirely. So now small businesses are free to offer anyone crappy coverage that they so choose.
Sure.
But it means that they're trying to sort of like work within the framework a little
of
bit
the law.
Of
right.
the law,
well, and
instead of
everyone who has sort of even been a proponent of this law has always said that that is going to have to be the case. I mean, Obama, even the Democrats, when they passed it, was like, this is, nobody thought the thing was perfect. I mean, you can't pass a government program this sweeping and think that you got it right without having to tweak the thing, you know?
It's right. Like, well, and so, Obama said that when they
So,
but you have to keep in mind, it was never the Democrats' program. It was the Republicans.
Right.
That's true.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah, and now they're I think realizing they're going to have to work with their own program. They're like trying to think of fixes to a program that they thought of now, just to be annoying. Like that's, you know, caps on deductibles is like the best, I guess, that you can do in that context. But also it may never matter again because the next election is going to be bought anyway, and we they may succeed in repealing. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen because there was a SCOTUS ruling this week
which is the Supreme Court. Those of us who are older and right. don't get into this POTUS.
Was that, uh-huh. did POTUS come from West Wing? Is that who started
that?
Because I, like, before the West Wing, I'd never heard of POTUS. We were talking about this yesterday.
They're always using, like, those crazy terms on Veep, too.
I know.
Like POTUS Flautus and V-POTUS and Flautus.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So SCOTUS, that's the Supreme Court.
Right.
Ruled in this case that was brought by the owner of an electrical engineering company in Alabama who wanted to donate tons and tons of money to the RNC party locally.
He needed more free speech than he had.
Right. He only had the amount of free speech that was afforded to all citizens, but he wanted an unlimited
amount
of free speech.
Wanted extra free speech.
Exactly. Yeah. So there was sort of like this 70s era restriction on how much you could give in a campaign cycle. How much each an individual could give in a campaign cycle. Right. Apparently, those are unconstitutional, according to this Supreme Court, which is a suspect declaration, since it's somehow managed. We've managed since the 70s with these restrictions, and we have so many other ways. It was a response to Watergate.
As someone who
remembers Watergate.
Has very strong memories of Watergate. It was basically. Elections were being bought. You know, Richard Nixon tried to buy an election, and at that time, that was a
novel idea.
No, it wasn't even a novel idea. It was an obnoxious idea. And I think that we're going to get back to
that kind
that
of politics.
Problem that it's a, no that it's a problem.
Yeah.
If people are buying elections, it's a problem because they're not representing you.
I think this is a problem that we're already having because in essence you're able to give unlimited funds to a super PAC.
Right.
So there are numerous ways you can give unlimited money to a campaign
That's sort of what I think. I think the thing that is the most troubling thing about this is that it sort of like seems to be a sort of like continuation of the rolling back of campaign finance laws. I think when you really sort of like get down to the nuts and bolts of this,
right, it's not
as bad as Citizens United because the money is already in politics and it's already going to these crazy super PACs. And now basically all it has done is lifted sort of the overall amount of money that you can give. You can still only give a limited amount of money to one candidate.
Right.
So yes, it's bad. I think it's a bad precedent.
Because striking down limits of any sort in the Supreme Court, like, why not strike down every... Like,
what's the difference between that and any other limit? That's what I think is troubling. I don't know that this...
But I also think there's a practical part of it, and I think that the very, very... I mean, David Koch does not want people to know that he's one of the big sponsors of NOVA, because that's for science, and he's against climate change.
Sure.
It does... It reaches a point where those things don't work, that you can't have it both ways, and that's where it kind of breaks down.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. I mean, I think that when these laws went into effect, there were probably fewer mechanisms through which you could give unlimited money independently to... Here's what I hope. And this is my attempt to make a positive spin of this, because this is not something I'm happy about.
Sure.
I'm hoping... because if you're giving money into a campaign cycle, that's public record. Super PAC giving is private. So that's secret. You don't know who's supporting super PACs.
Yeah.
This kind of giving is not private.
Yeah.
You have to release this information. This information is publicly available. So I'm hoping there's more people going on the record about what kind of money they're giving to whatever, because that makes it easier for us to know where people are coming from. And also I'm hoping that I think one of the drivers of movements like the Tea Party and things like that is the ability for people to sort of create these independent political entities that then become lobbying arms of, to their own organization. So, like, the Tea Party can have their own super PAC. They're not answerable to the RNC. They're not allowed to talk to the RNC. And they become a group that affects the policy of the RNC because there's all this money in it.
Yeah,
but the Tea Party, one thing you have to always remember about the Tea Party is the people behind the Tea Party have no money.
But that's what I'm saying. They're buying those votes with super PAC money, which is a few secret people giving in a shadowy organization. If those people were, able to give an unlimited amount to the RNC directly, first of all, they wouldn't be able to earmark it as like only for use for crazy things.
Well, that's
And they would also you would have to know where it was. It would be on the record where it was coming from.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if this ruling existed without
Citizens United,
this would be sort of okay because it would be the money going directly to candidates and to the party, which is what I think that you would ultimately want. I think the candidates themselves would prefer that, and I think that the people themselves would prefer that. But the problem is that we still have Citizens United.
So you can do both now.
You can do both.
So now you can give unlimited money.
Because $5,200, I think, which is what the amount of money that you can give to one single candidate, is not ultimately that amount of money.
No, or exactly
that much money. Amount of money. I think it's the fact that you can still give, you know, $20 million to Crossroads USA, and that's...
Yeah. But a point that NPR made that I think makes a lot of sense with it is that there are very few people who can give $1 billion to this. There are some.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few, but there aren't that many people. There are a lot of people who can give $100,000 to something.
Well, and
those are more likely to be... people who are more concerned about, you know, the will of the people, the good of the people, as opposed to...
You're more likely to find Democrats taking, giving $100,000.
Yeah, taking,
so, you know... The sort of 2 billion givers.
Well, and the other thing that I can't remember even who said this, but I think it was a you know, a Democrat who was again trying to put, like, a positive spin on this.
You have
it was
to
sort
try.
Of like, lest we forget... Mitt Romney did not win the presidency, and every single one of Karl Rove, or Karl Rove's candidates failed. I mean, they all lost.
And
so,
because,
like, I'm not saying that this is a good thing, but, like, money doesn't necessarily
buy you
the election.
Because actually, it's votes that buy you the election,
right.
And the thing that you always forget with the money part is you think you can attract people with campaign ads and that type of thing. And that doesn't necessarily work.
It doesn't.
It's votes that work.
It's
and
votes.
We learned this
in New
York City.
There's not a direct correlation.
We had a mayor for 12 years who bought each of his elections. His hardest election was the one he spent the most money on, which was his last election. And the thing is, if people had understood he could have lost it, he would have lost it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, again, I heard someone sort of, like, I think rightly bring up, you know, the notion that, you know, the reason that so many people blamed Karl Rove's candidates or, you know, him for sort of, like, wrongly spending this money is because the thing that's the most expensive thing that you can spend money on as... you know, someone who's spending money in a campaign is television ads.
Spots.
And that, as sort of we continue to you know, move forward into the future, are becoming less important.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that
there's
between social media and, you know, grassroots campaigns to, like, get people registered and get people to the polls. Like, those are the things that won Obama the 2012 election.
But also, there's another part of it, and that is... the younger generation, which is becoming a bigger player in it all, and I suspect they're actually going to be a big player in the 2014 elections because they walked away from the 2010 elections, and I think they were smart enough to realize that was a mistake, is they are not reachable because they don't have telephones. They have cell phones.
Yep.
And cell phones are not reachable in the way that...
Right, you can't pull them effectively.
You can't.
You can't control what they decide the story is, because that's what Mitt Romney learned, I think, as well, is you can spend $1 zillion on campaign ads and, you know, that are targeted to specific markets, but if someone catches a viral video of you sounding like an asshole in a private event...
You're toast.
20-somethings can be talking about that for 3 months. I mean, you can only buy yourself bad press. I mean, you can only buy yourself good press. You can't control bad press, though,
right,
in the same way that you used to be able to.
Yeah.
But also, I think another thing is that 20-somethings and 30-somethings are more responsible to the society. In
maybe.
A way
I mean,
that,
just generally. Generationally,
so.
I think, though, that 20-somethings... people, you know, this sort of old adage is that, like, people get more conservative as they get older.
No,
I don't think that's necessarily true.
I don't think that's the case. But I think what it is that... younger people are more open to the issues of society, and so they're more kind of accepting of different things. I think that the Tea Party was an anomaly of older people who were,
panicked.
A lot of the people in the Tea Party were people on Social Security who had this idea that, yeah, I want it for myself, but I don't want it for anybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was a real thing. I don't think there were even that many of them. you know, as far as people were concerned, enough to really make a difference with the vote. I think that what happened in 2010, because that was a big year of it, is that there weren't enough people voting, because I think young people didn't realize you have to always vote. You can't take a year off.
Obama's running.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, Democrats are sort of like historically bad in off-year elections.
Yeah. I think Democrats get stressed. I think there's like a stress quotient with Democrats where they like can't keep paying attention because it's too depressing.
Also, you have to remember with them, they are, you know, they're protecting their own little powerdom. And so you've got all these elected officials who are Democrats or Republicans who their whole purpose in life is to keep their jobs. Just like everybody else. Yeah, that's true. They just want to keep
all of
their
the leadership in the House and Senate are professional Democrats.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, that's and no one gets excited about them.
No one should. I mean, because they're the wrong people in government.
Hillary Clinton is a professional Democrat. That's why we're not excited about her. And that's, it's going to be interesting to see how this comes into play. Or if, you know, if it makes a noticeable difference in a world in which everyone can just give unlimited money to super PACs and not care about anything.
Yeah. I'm not convinced that this is going to be that big of a deal.
I don't think it will be unless
I could be proven wrong, and
I don't think it will be unless it sets off a sort of larger discussion about whether we should get rid of limits entirely.
Right. I was going to say, at what point...
That's when it's dangerous.
I think it could go that the very rich are very worried about it can go totally a different way than the media is playing it, because, you know, they pulled out the troops with the Tea Party.
Yeah.
They were not, you know... And they're gone. You know, if you go look for... in upstate New York, where I live, I know some of them. I see them and all that. And they just... It's not happening anymore because they're not being taken care of.
Right.
Yeah. And well, that was... It was a 50% populist movement that could not sustain itself because, you know... Also, Brent just tried to knock over the mic. Tried to knock it into my head.
The only thing that sort of like concerns me about this is that obviously, you know, the Supreme Court has now heard two cases about campaign finance reform, and if they hear a third case where someone thinks that $5,200 cap should be lifted because that affects the amount of free speech that they're able to give,
then that's
an issue, because then you're sort of able to give, you know, a zillion dollars to one congressman, and then you really do have people buying specific elections.
Yeah, I think they have to be very careful, because there are still people on that Supreme Court, Kennedy, Scalia, and Thomas, who swung an election.
That's true.
And so whether they should even be involved in this or not is really questionable.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought of that. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're thinking about it either.
No, they never have. No, they don't think about it. They don't think about it. But that's a very serious concern. If you have swung an election, which is very clear what they did, then you have to say, well, are these the people, shouldn't they recuse themselves from these things?
And
they won't.
And one last potential silver lining here, I think, is that I think the more cases they hear and side on the side, you know, that they're continuing to side on, I think the more clear the more credibility they lose. But I think it also becomes more clear that you know, Congress needs to do something about it.
Yeah.
You know,
and there are even Republicans in Congress who sort of like want to take care of it. John McCain is sort of like the leader in the Senate.
Well, my father used to say, who really followed these things, Lila's grandfather, is there's always one part of the government that steps up when the others fail. And when I was growing up, when I was of, you know, when I was your age, it was the Supreme Court that was doing the good work. Mm. I mean, Congress and the president were not. But the Warren Supreme Court did more for people than, you know, probably I'll ever see again in my lifetime, where things, real differences were made. Mm-hmm. And then we went through this phase where, after Watergate, basically Congress stepped up because the presidency was toast.
Sure.
I mean, you know, after Nixon, because what Nixon did was really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
And people got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so Congress stepped up and they they were the ones that were the responsible party. There's always kind of got to be an adult in the room. Yeah. Sadly, right now.
I was just about to ask you who it was right now.
There doesn't seem to be, but, you know, the person who's trying desperately to become the adult in the room, I think, is the president at this point.
Yeah. He's the closest that we have to an adult.
Right. Yeah. Right. And he is, things, it's, you know, it's teeny tiny.
The change
steps.
Is slow, but it's coming. Very,
but it is coming. And if he were, you know, kind of had it more together, he would be doing it a lot faster now because he can. He's got these 2 years where he could actually do it.
Yeah.
Right.
But the Supreme Court has embarrassed itself so badly.
Yeah. The Supreme Court is really just.
Yeah. And even to the point where, you know, there are a couple people on it who, you know, who seem to have some, you know, the four that seem to have it together. But they are, they are tainted by what the five are doing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the next big thing I think is going to come up with the Supreme Court is this whole issue of birth control.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think they're going to, I think it's actually going to be, and I shouldn't speak because I'll be totally wrong, but I think that with that case, it's going to be like a 7-2 decision in favor of a woman's right to choose and a company to have to pay for the health benefits for that.
Interesting.
Because they cannot do, if they do that, the trouble is, you know, you can never forget Liz Estrada, you know, which is, the women walk away and say no more of this.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, it's just too big a change. We should be moving forward. We should not be moving backward.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's kind of what's happening with this.
Yeah.
Well, moving only horizontally in the gun
like the gutter
like a gutter garden slightly downhill taking a slow downhill road to another Fort Hood shooting.
Oh my gosh, seriously.
So basically this was all about some guy who couldn't get enough leave to go visit his after his mother's death. I think he wanted, you know, I think he's from Puerto Rico. He wanted to go to Puerto Rico for his mother's death.
Right.
And they wouldn't give him enough leave. So he shot up Fort Hood, like you do when you're just a little pissed off.
Right.
That's what everyone's doing.
And have, you know, mental issues.
Right. And have mental issues and have access to Smith & Wesson related products.
Sure.
From what I understand, he bought the gun at the same place the last Fort
Hood. That's, yes, he did.
The Fort Hood gun shop.
Gun shop, right.
Yes, of course.
When you're looking to shoot somebody at the army base.
That's where you
go. There's only one place to go.
Exactly.
It's their calling card.
Right, exactly.
Oh,
God. Yeah. A lot of questions raised. None of them are new.
No.
Questions about...
We're not going to answer them. We're not going to answer them.
We're going to choose to not think about it. Psychiatric conditions handling weaponry were raised, not answered. Questions about really what's going on in the military at all raised.
Yeah.
Don't know the answer. Lopez, the shooter, was on like a trillion prescription drugs of various sorts. They're all commonly used. You know, he was on a lot of commonly used drugs, but they were like depression drugs, insomnia drugs, like things that everybody is taking maybe too many of. That were not assisting in his psychiatric issues.
Right. But he also, and he had seen duty in Iraq. He was, had come back from there. So, you know, of course, a lot of people were also talking about PTSD and sort of what, because he was being, you know, treated for a lot of those things and he was seeing a psychiatrist.
Some of them were behavioral issues.
Right. He was seeing a psychiatrist because he had a lot of behavioral issues. And, you know, I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's a tragedy, but I mean, it seems like another one of those things.
It's just a thing that happens in America.
That could maybe not be happening in America.
Well, and I think another issue that we need to look at in this society is we're seeing too much suicide by murder.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. These are all suicide murders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Silver lining, guys. No service person was killed overseas in March for the first time in forever.
That's so long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is huge. But then we went in
April,
at the beginning of April.
Starting off not as well.
Just, we couldn't stand
shooting
for
ourselves
that.
In
so
April.
We just had to shoot ourselves
in April. Right. In March, though, things were going swimmingly.
Yeah.
This is really making March look like an exceptional month in a lot of ways.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And CNN, of course, did their best. God. This is like giving them a renewed purpose in life after Malaysia flight, whatever, had no news this week.
But they're still treating all of the non-news of the Malaysia airline flight as like breaking news.
Well, obviously they
are. It's all breaking news. They don't have anything else going on. But they had, God bless them, had a CGI animation not long after this happened of like playing out the entire Fort Hood shooting.
Yeah.
I mean,
in case you didn't know what it would be like, what it would look like to have a guy on an army base go berserk shooting everyone. Yeah.
Oh, God.
In case you needed some sort of diagram.
CNN has too much technology on their hands.
Much technology.
They've got...
Well, they did the...
They have holograms.
Yeah, the
holograms.
When Wilf Blitzer started the holograms, and that was a few years ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago. They haven't really come back with the holograms.
With that Malaysia, I think it was... They couldn't. But they had, with the Malaysia flight, they had the... They were, like, the flight simulator, like, in the cockpit. They were, like, doing, like, things.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, they just need to stop.
They weren't the news network that climbed into the Saddam Hussein hole, were they?
Oh, I don't know.
It was either Fox News or CNN. It was one of them. And I know it sounds like it was definitely Fox News, but I think that we've proven that it could have very easily been CNN. Where, after they found Saddam Hussein in the foxhole, they built a wooden box of the same dimensions and then had the anchor climb in. So that's happening on the news, guys.
Oh, God.
So this at least gave CNN something to do that wasn't about the Malaysia flight, because things have gotten pretty dicey over there.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't want to cover anything.
Well, a shooting is the next best thing.
They love a good shooting at CNN. Yeah. They don't mess around.
Yeah.
They're probably still interviewing family members.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy Grace.
Exactly. And we're all going to die soon anyway. Because
very soon. Sooner than we previously thought.
Sooner than we thought. So maybe it doesn't matter anyway. Because the UN released a climate change report this week with very ominous sounding information.
Bleak, grim, ominous, all of those words.
Yeah. Basically, we're all at risk of famine, drought. Anything that you can imagine would be a risk. We currently are at risk for.
Some things that you probably hadn't thought of.
Right.
Actually. Yeah.
So true. And I mean, you know, they said in the report, and people know from experience, that the more that these environmental factors sort of get messed up, the more likely we are to see sort of like human factors getting messed up in the process. We're more likely to see conflicts over food and water and other resources. We're more likely to see nations destabilized by the resulting chaos.
Right, exactly. Because they've been doing these reports for, I think, something like 7 or 8 years.
It's only getting more bleak the longer.
And this was the first time in the reports that they had directly linked the climate change with destabilization of nation states. And basically, you know, it said it increases the risk of violent conflicts in the form of civil war and intergroup violence by amplifying well-documented drivers of these conflicts, such as poverty, economic shocks. People are going to be fighting over water and food,
resources,
and crops, resources. Right, exactly. So
when resources get messed around with,
and soon, this
soon,
is,
yeah, this they, is this
it's
was happening.
Happening. In,
yeah, well, it is.
Africa,
yeah.
It's happening. I mean, you know, they're
right. It's one of those things where you sort of like can't. You can't ultimately know whether it's the new norm until it's sort of too late.
Yeah.
Because, like, we've talked a lot about this in California. You know, we're on this sort of 2-year drought. And, you know, there are a lot of people who just think that this is our new weather.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
And we can't know until...
Until it's too late.
Until we know. And once we do know, then you're screwed.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what I feel is going to happen here.
Yeah,
and that's
why the Northeast, and we didn't get half of what they got in the Midwest. Of course, no one is here from the Midwest because there's probably still digging out of snow.
Yeah.
One of the things that's so kind of bizarre about it is it started out as global warming, and it's not it's climate change, and climate change, you know, can go in
any dramatic
way,
any direction.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that it has almost been, not even almost, it has been a detriment to this whole case that it was ever initially called global warming.
Yeah,
because,
of course.
And we couldn't have known when we sort of started calling it that, because we just sort of generally knew that the planet was getting warmer. Of course, you have all these people who think that because they're getting snow, there's no such thing as global warming, and that's not.
But I don't think anybody. But, yeah, I don't. The only people I believe don't believe that there is something very serious happening are in Washington, and they got. They had a worse winter than they definitely believe
that something is going on, and are cynically thinking that we have all this time to be playing devotes over it by denying it.
Right. Yeah, but I think also a part of the situation is that the deniers are in power. Yeah. And they have got to be put out of power because they are not serving anybody's
needs. That those deniers will become believers as soon as they feel like the money and the votes are going to follow them.
But I don't understand, I don't understand the corporations that don't understand there's big money in solving that problem. There's bigger money in solving that problem.
Because I understand that there are corporations, and this is what is driving the whole thing, is there are corporations devoted to the status quo because they want to keep producing whatever dumb thing they're producing polluting the world. Yeah. They want to keep producing oil. They want to keep polluting the air. They want to keep doing all the things that they're doing that are making them money. However, ultimately, if this leads to huge, large scale disruptions of civilization, the money is not going to follow them. So it's worth maybe investing in figuring out how to solve the problem. Well, then
it is, and I have always felt like I think that we also, we need to be smarter about how we sort of play on people's beliefs and emotions to sort of get this solved too. Because as I have always felt it has shocked me that, evangelicals haven't sort of, gotten more behind this. Because I just don't, you would think that it would be something that they would want to sort of, solve. Because we're destroying, the creation that God gave them in Genesis.
I do not believe that. I think evangelicals are looking for the rapture. I think there are a whole lot of people in this country that assume that the rapture is coming, and so they're going to go in this direction because,
here's what surprises me about evangelicals not taking it.
I don't think that everybody is I think
we're talking about a group of people that have taken a lot on faith. Of crazy nonsense on faith. What is the benefit of taking a denial on faith instead of taking a proactive stance on faith? That's what I don't understand. Maybe they're all looking for that. They're all looking for the rapture. That's crazy. Sure. Do what you want. But it seems weird to me because at this point, you have to take the denial on faith as well, because there's so much evidence supporting the contrary. You have to really believe that something is not happening, which is a crazy thing to believe ardently that something is not happening.
Yeah.
It seems crazy to me that people are not willing to take on faith that something is happening so that we solve it.
Well, and that's sort of what I think. Yeah. I think my bigger point was that I think that there are better ways that we could think about, selling to people that this is happening. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I've always thought denial.
I don't think anybody questions that. I mean, I said to the mayor of my little village, who is very, very conservative, I passed him in the street, and we still had snow in March and all that. I said, "Where is global warming when we need it?" And the guy said, "Yeah, I know. I just don't get it." Now, this is a guy who does not. I'm sure does not believe in global warming. He's a very conservative guy and all that. But there's a practicality to it, and
in an agricultural community too. You're talking about a village that's supported by farm. It's an agriculture community. It's a farming community.
Same here too. Exactly. California's going to not be able to sustain ourselves.
But the state of California is not who's driving this discussion.
No, not at all.
Neither is New York.
It's not the state of conservatives. We're not. It's states though that don't have a lot of people in them that you would think would also benefit from thinking about nature because they have to live in it.
But it's also
as horrible as that sounds.
It's states that are subsidized by our states.
Our states
have got to step up and say, you know what? The subsidy is over.
Right.
Yeah.
Willing to believe in fact.
Yeah. We're not going to support all your military bases and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not where this is going.
I agree.
Because you're trying to ruin our lives.
Your coal mines.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's trying to ruin our lives by having dumb policy and not believing in the facts of science.
Right.
Some nonsense. Speaking of bad ideas. Paul Ryan.
One man is full of them.
One man is full of them. Paul Ryan unveiled
this year's version of the Paul Ryan budget, which is the same version of his budget last year.
It's the same.
Except it's hated more this year because...
Surprisingly.
Well, here's the
thing. No, I mean, not surprisingly.
So there was that whole budget agreement that he and... Patty Murray came to that sort of like... was the thing where we solved the budget for like the next 2 years and it was sort of like universally hated by everyone, but everybody passed it.
Equally because
it
was hated sort of like, by everyone.
Right. It was able to get us, you know, get us a budget for like the next 2 years, basically. So his budget that he unveiled now sort of sticks to those principles for the next 2 years. And so all the Republicans hate it.
Right.
So it's like the Democrats hate it because it wants to cut, it's, you know, $5 trillion out of everything.
And some of the cuts are like unrealistically crazy. They're cutting like billions from education and things that have already been cut to the extreme.
And Sarah Palin is calling it a joke because it doesn't do
enough.
Sticks to the budget agreement for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So this is going nowhere faster than even the last year's was because it's just... Even last year's the Republicans liked, and I think even passed a version of it, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, they always
they always passed it.
The Congress always passes.
This isn't even not even going to make it out of the House.
No,
the Republican controlled
it's universally
crazy
hated
house.
In a way that doesn't make it possible for them to get together on how much they hate it and come up and hammer out a solution.
Right.
But also, this is the problem with putting Paul Ryan in charge of any sort of budget. Like he seems to be like some sort of go-to budget drawer, which is like. He's the wrong guy for that job.
Right.
And we can all agree on that, I think.
Well,
he's sort of like, he's too contentious just as a figure, and he has terrible ideas that he's constantly sticking to.
I sort of, when I heard that he was sort of releasing this week, my first thought was, don't release that this year.
No.
I mean, like, because...
don't do that.
When you're trying to sort of, like, win back the House and the Senate, I mean, like, this is just... Just don't release a budget. They haven't been passing one for a long time. This was so panned by everyone. Remember, it was panned by the Catholic Church?
Yeah.
Because Paul Ryan's a Catholic. It was, I mean, everyone hated
year. What the deal is with this is they are totally... They don't know what to do about the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah
they're without a plan.
They're without a plan.
They're rudderless,
and they,
floating
you know,
through
they thought they could, you know, up until the end of March, they thought they could fight that. Because this happened, this happened like April 1st or something. This happened when it became very clear that the Affordable Care Act
was
going to
work.
Goals.
Yeah.
And
they were like, hey, Paul, you have that budget, right, from last year?
Something in there.
You just, why don't you just stick... Put that back on everyone's desks.
But, I mean, the other thing that sort of, like, strikes me is so, I mean, the budget on its face is sort of just insane. But the other thing is Paul Ryan has been, like, on his year-long tour trying to solve poverty.
Right.
Remember?
Yes.
Like,
because
we've talked about this. And
Paul
now,
Ryan is our nation's...
And now he wants to basically just, like, gut every single part. He wants to
gut
Pell Grants.
Plan.
He wants to gut education. He wants
but
to gut... He wants everything.
It's part
it's
of
like
his three-pronged
like
food stamps. He wants to... That,
and
how
you know
is,
what would
how
end...
How is that
Ooh,
helping
sorry,
poverty?
Just really
now,
hit the mic
right
there. Now I'm... what would end poverty really effectively is starving to death all of the poor people in the country.
Well, because...
There's
not enough
death.
You know, the Congress, the Republican Congress, and even the Democrats, and even the Democratic president, they don't like poor people. They'll go on and on and on about the middle class, and then it used to be that what politicians talked about was raising the poor out of their terrible circumstances.
Right. Yeah, no one wants to talk about the poor now.
People, they don't talk about poor people. They don't like people.
Yeah, this
poor
is even.
People.
I mean, this is an issue within
the
Democratic Party
care.
As much as
they,
no, I agree.
It's fine if they starve. Who do, you know what? Are they
as long as middle class people have middle class.
I think part of the problem is there are no people stepping up and saying, "Are you kidding?" And I was never a great supporter of the Kennedys and all that. I should have been. I feel terribly guilty that I'm not. But when Robert Kennedy said, "You know what? This is really messed up, and we cannot as a country do this." There is nobody, you know, there's Bernie Sanders who's making the points, but he has so many points he has to make that he, you know, it gets diffused because it's just, it's in so many different places. But there's nobody getting up there and saying, how can you people live with yourselves if you know that there are children who don't get enough to eat?
Well, this is, I think, part of the issue with the campaign finance stuff that we were talking about earlier, is that when money rules politics to the degree it does now, poor people really don't matter to elected officials. Well, they don't care.
No, of course they don't. No, they don't. Because they don't give money.
And Robert Kennedy really was sort of probably the last presidential candidate. There was a great book called The Last Campaign, which was about his campaign for president, which was fairly short because he was assassinated. But, you know, I mean,
it was George McGovern. George McGovern was the
one who started
the food stamp program. So George McGovern was 72.
Right.
Right, exactly. Fair enough. But I mean, he was even sort of, you know, going to, even his campaign staff thought he was nuts because he was going to you know, he was going to Indian reservations where there's, huge amounts of poverty and stuff like that. Like, you don't see that anymore.
You don't see that, but also it was a very peculiar time because for him, his personal loss was so much greater than any loss that you could understand. You two couldn't understand because you're only children. But when you lose your sibling and the way he lost his brother.
Sure.
Because this was after he lost his brother. And it opens up this other world to you.
Sure.
But you're right. There's nobody doing
it. No one talks about it.
And nobody talks about it. And it's wrong not to talk about it. Because the middle class,
the middle class are fine. The middle class, it's nice to help the middle class. Well, because you don't want to screw them over.
No, the rich are dependent on them because they're the people who buy their products. Right.
Without the middle class, we don't. But you can't. The middle class are not the ones who are, you know, when we talk about cutting all of these programs because, you know, that seems to be palatable to everyone. It seems to be palatable to everyone to make certain cuts because as long as it won't touch the middle class, everything's fine. It's like the middle class aren't depending on food stamps. They're not depending on, free education is not, you know, it's helpful to the middle class. I was certainly educated in public schools, but the middle class aren't the ones who depend on free education to sort of improve their lot in life.
Yeah.
The middle class don't have to work as hard as the poor in order to maintain a basic standard of living. All of these things are things, you know, all these things that we feel comfortable cutting because at least we're not really touching the middle class are all things that, like, make a huge difference if you're poor. And it's not, you know, we can't talk about it because poor people apparently don't count because they can't donate to your campaign.
Right. But we've kind of lost our way in what we kind of, you know, take seriously in this country.
And if you want to help poor people now, you're a communist. You're a socialist, not a communist.
You're a socialist.
You're a socialist.
And, you know, who knows what a socialist is?
Well, it's a wonderful person who, who believes in helping a society.
Well, but that's, I think that, to your point about no one even really talking about poverty these days, I mean, I think that I think within the last couple of weeks when we were talking about Paul Ryan, sort of applauded him for sort of even going on this tour. Now, granted, he got everything wrong.
It was the worst. worst poverty tour.
He went on a year-long tour to solve poverty and realized that the best way to solve it was to take everything away that they could possibly need.
Right. Yeah.
So he got it wrong. But I mean, you know,
it was an indication that the GOP was really stretching. They were like, okay, we're losing the middle class. We're losing everyone else.
They may have all the money, but they don't have all the votes.
No. Well, certainly they don't have all the ideas either.
They don't have the ideas. Not that the Democrats have any great ideas.
No, but there's only so many ways you can mask Republicanism.
And that's where the young come in is. The environment is a very, very big concern to the young because it's their future.
Right.
And so to just, you know, throw that off and say that that's not, you know, climate change isn't happening. You cannot say that to someone who's 20 years old or 30 years old.
A train that I think, like the gay marriage train, is going to play itself out at a certain point.
Yeah.
It's like that.
I mean, one of the things that I'm really surprised that I think I'm going to see in my lifetime, which blows me away, is the legalization of marijuana.
It's like, really? Someone from the 60s generation.
I cannot believe that. You know, there are these changes happening.
Little things that are happening.
Because, you know, as people come up, they want these changes. Yeah. And, But I think that a lot of the arguments that these people are making are not
irrelevant.
So
we had a weird situation happen in a Senate hearing.
Yes.
This week.
There was, so you probably heard about this because it was a pretty big story, but GM has recently recalled 7 million cars. Basically, if you drive a GM, take it to your nearest dealer.
It's definitely got a problem.
Lest you die.
Right.
So,
You don't want to be adding to the number of deaths that were caused by a car that they released 10 years ago that has now totaled 13 deaths where the ignition would just shut off while you were driving, making all of the systems of the car just shut off mid-drive.
Right. So the big thing that has happened is that, you know, this has caused 13 deaths, and it has sort of come to light recently that GM knew about this 10 years ago when all of this started happening and didn't recall these cars, and it's caused a huge situation for them, rightly.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm right about this, but it appears that all of those deaths were young people.
I think most of them were, yes.
Yeah,
because I think a lot of them were happening like in the, weren't they happening like with the Cruze?
Yeah, it was cheaper cars.
It wasn't their fancy cars. Yeah. I think it was, exactly.
And also new drivers, basically.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, you know, people certainly didn't know what to do when all of their car just shut off mid-drive and couldn't do anything.
Right.
So anyway, Mary Barra, who is the CEO of GM at the moment, was facing testimony, or was giving testimony to the Senate.
Yeah.
And she was being questioned by the likes of Barbara Boxer and Claire McCaskill and a few other, Kelly Ayotte, I think, was there.
Yeah.
And they just, like, laid into her. Because she was being really annoying.
Well,
acting like she couldn't possibly have known anything. Like, she didn't know anything. She literally knew nothing.
But don't you wonder why it was that GM suddenly had a woman running the company?
Yeah.
So a person
could give testimony about knowing nothing and everyone would be like, well she's a woman.
Well, I know. And she's sort of has had to... I think you're absolutely right because she has sort of... She's had to deal with the families. She's had to sort of like deal with... You know, because she's the first... female CEO of any of the car companies.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's just a PR move that they really thought they were geniuses for carrying
and
out.
And they pay her less than they paid the men.
Well, of course. She's a woman. She's not worth more.
Yeah.
She got up there and just pretended like she didn't know anything about anything. That no one knew.
And
no
she
one
probably
in the,
didn't.
She probably didn't.
Right.
In her previous, and Barbara Boxer was questioning her about this, even in her previous position, she would have been in a position to know about a lot of these things.
Well, because that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know, because people...
She's worked there for 33 years.
I was going to say, people initially were sort of like, oh, well, she's the new CEO. Like, what could she have done? No, she's a lifer. I mean, and it's not like she just got, you know, promoted to CEO from somebody who was on the factory line. I mean, she was someone...
She was in leadership.
She was someone who would have known that this was going on. So I think... To think that she didn't know is ludicrous because, she would have had to have, I think.
Well, Barbara Boxer said, you don't know anything about anything. If this is the new GM leadership, it's pretty lacking.
Right.
Because that was sort of her question.
And, you know, but also think about the fact that here's Barbara Boxer, who's this big woman, you know, taking down a woman who's finally raised to that position.
Well, that's...
That's
the sort of, way it happens, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly the way it
the
happens.
The and woman who breaks the glass ceiling is put in the position so that everyone else can tear them down.
Right, and it's, you know, and it's, I think that it's, you know, it was the men in that company who were protecting their own thing, and...
Well, she was probably the only woman in the leadership.
And they're going to come back, and they're going to solve the problem, because men, you know, It's a very messy situation, and I think, you know, what's particularly messy about it is that I suspect it played on young drivers. I think that the reason why, if it's true, and I don't know this, but if it's true that most of the drivers who were in this situation were very young, it's, you know, if you grew up driving a stick shift car and it started to act a particular way, you would, you know, either know how to grab the emergency brake there are things you would know how to do, but for young drivers, they wouldn't have known how to do it. And I suspect it's many, many more than 13.
Probably, it's just
because how do you know? Once someone dies in a car accident like that, can you really know?
No, and it could have caused other accidents. Right, you know, exactly. if you collide with another car, it's one thing if you drive into a tree on an empty road and you're like, well, your car seems to have broken.
Right. I had a friend who just was in an accident where they totaled their car, and he was, you know, and he's a man in his 60s, and he was horrified because he thinks of himself as a good driver until the insurance company went and followed through the claim, and it turned out there was a recall on the car for that particular thing. It was not his fault.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, luckily nobody was hurt.
God, I hope. But this just gives me another thing to worry about out there in my sea of worries. Driving is worrying enough.
Yeah. Well, your car's having its own issues.
Once you're driving a 14-year-old car, it's not recalls that are going to be responsible. Well, yeah, at least mine's a manual.
Right.
So, you know, I can downshift or something. I don't know what you do. Probably nothing. Probably die.
Yeah.
Probably the same thing. But
this is obviously going to be a huge problem for GM.
It's
going to
be a huge problem for GM.
As it should be.
Yeah,
as it absolutely should be. Yeah. Can you... In 2010, they recalled 4 million cars.
That was the most.
The most by far, because last year it was like 1.2 million or something like that. This year they've recalled 7 million cars already.
Already.
And the sort of difference between that and their next biggest year is made up of cars that they made 10 years ago.
10 years ago, exactly, right.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Don't be doing that.
Yeah. No.
This sneak it under the wire in a 1.2 kind of year, you know?
Right, exactly.
Don't do it in the 7 million year. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Yeah. In any case, on Thursday, there was a vote in the Senate to declassify a bunch of information or a bunch of documents that pertain to us torturing terrorists or suspected terrorists.
Yes.
So that's awesome. So we're about to learn all sorts of really not flattering things about what we've been up to.
Right. Dianne Feinstein fighting against terrorism. Really sort of like, you know, she's been the champion of this.
Yeah.
And she called its findings shockings, and she said that the CIA's behavior is in stark contrast to our values as a nation. Of course, the CIA is taking issue with this. They say that it's factually inaccurate, and that it's misleading, and so they're not having it.
No.
The CIA.
But if it's a classified report that was a study of CIA activities, then you'd have to assume some of it is true.
You would think.
Even if it's not the whole story.
Yeah.
It's probably not a good thing.
Right.
If
now... Interestingly enough, this is like a typically American story, basically.
This is a typically bureaucratic story.
Right, exactly. So they voted, the Senate Intelligence Committee voted to release this. So the White House sort of, I think, has to okay it because, like, all of these documents need declassified because, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So the White House has now said on Thursday that it wanted a prompt public response, and they then announced that the CIA is going to play the lead role in reviewing it before it gets declassified. Now, the CIA is the one who the document is about, and they have already claimed, as we said, you know, it's factually inaccurate. So they now get to sort of, like, oversee redactions. They get to oversee...
Doesn't it seem like another agency could step in here?
Right, yes.
Just somebody, anybody
It doesn't seem like the CIA is the right agency to be overseeing the release of this document.
Like, DOD hates the CIA.
Yeah, let them
Let them do it. Let them review each other's, you know? It just doesn't seem like the right plan.
I mean...
Don't be doing that. So... This report, when it finally comes out, is going to be meaningless.
Right.
It will not show anything.
Probably.
So we just have to trust Dianne Feinstein's read on it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Brent, there were jobs numbers this week.
I know. You know, it's my favorite time of the month.
Brent, somehow, I never once read the newspaper and seen a headline that was like jobs numbers and thought to myself, oh, jobs numbers. Like, Brent somehow finds the jobs numbers every week.
Well, I always hear about it.
I never hear about it. Never hear about the jobs numbers. I hear about all sorts of other random news. None of it is ever the jobs
numbers.
Well,
it's funny because the reason that I clicked on it, well, I mean, I would have clicked on it anyway, but like...
Let's review that for a moment.
The headline on the Huffington Post article about this was... Further proof that Obama is the worst socialist ever.
I didn't see that one, but then I suspected it could be about jobs numbers. Didn't click on it.
It was about jobs numbers because basically we found that private employers added 192,000 jobs in March, which was lower than everyone thought it was going to be. All the economists thought it was going to be closer to 300,000, so everybody was not happy.
It probably was.
We're back. Well, exactly. Next month we'll know. They revised January and February up by like 40,000 or something like that. So we may find out in a couple weeks that it was actually
7 million. We don't know. Could have been any number.
It's hard to know. You can't know.
No.
So, but anyway, public sector jobs,
which you can know.
None.
Zero.
Didn't add any of those.
No public sector jobs.
Yeah. No, I think they actually lost public sector jobs. I can't remember, but let me look. Yeah. So, and this has been an ongoing trend.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been cutting public sector jobs really for years, basically. Yeah. You know, and...
It's because we don't like having good jobs here.
Right.
We want to make everyone suffer through...
Yeah. But Obama's a socialist.
Yes. Terrible socialist.
Cutting public sector jobs.
Cutting public sector jobs. Mm-hmm. Getting the private sector all...
Making sure capitalism is...
up and running. Uh-huh. Bailing banks out.
Yeah.
And then letting them stay independent. It's all sorts of fun socialist activities that he's been up to.
So next month, we'll have more jobs numbers for you, and we'll tell you that what we just told you was all wrong.
So don't worry if you've already forgotten. I have, and I don't care.
Yeah.
It's basically time for Hillary Pillory.
Yeah, why not? Let's call it that.
Let's call it that.
Yeah.
So, lobbyists are entering the game on Hillary 2016. It's time, guys.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about her sort of shadow campaign.
Right.
Because, you know, she's not She's not yet running for president, obviously.
She's got a very extensive shadow campaign that includes everybody who would be included in a regular campaign. But it's not any real indication.
And they're not really happening in the shadows because
they're right
we're
out there
talking
in the
about
open.
It.
We've been talking about it for months. Yeah.
Exactly. But they just had a big event this week, the Ready for Hillary folks. Mm-hmm. And it was run entirely by... corporate lobbyists.
Yeah.
As one might expect
from a Hillary or Ready for Hillary event or any Hillary Clinton related event. It was the seats or I guess the sort of what you had to pay or donate to get into the event was hosts had to donate $2,500, mm-hmm. attendees $1,000.
It was a big event that was all consultants and lobbyists.
This is the beginning of the sort of Hillary Clinton campaign season.
Right.
This was it. This is their first big event.
Yeah, and this, I think, I mean, besides all of the reason that we've already told you that, you know, she's not right now.
She's not even trying to look like we're wrong.
No, exactly. Like, this is just like, to be a corporatist right now, I just don't think gets you out of a Democratic primary in 2016. This is not what she should be doing right now, and I know that it's not she. I'm using air quotes right now.
Right.
Like, she's not doing this.
Ready for Hillary.
It's her group. But
who's
talking
to Huma Abedin, who's talking to the Hillary campaign people, who's talking to everyone, should have told them not to host.
Don't be doing this.
As the highest profile Hillary super PAC that is already advertising for her 2016 election.
Don't be making all of your money from events that are being hosted by lobbyists.
Don't do that.
Stop doing that.
It's a terrible idea.
But also, she needs to lose some age in order to do this.
She's some age?
Well, No, she is too old. I know she's too old. She's younger than I am. But I know that you reach a certain point. And she had a real challenge with being Secretary of State. She got sick.
Yeah.
And that's... You know, that's
well. There's been a lot of rumblings, and I think we even talked about it maybe like a couple months ago. That there are people who think that the reason that she sort of, I mean, and it's too early to declare, but that she has been so vague about it is because her health is potentially actually not that great.
Right now. Well, and it's really exhausting to be president.
Sure.
People age a lot in the presidency, she already has aged a lot in the Secretary of State.
And being first lady and being a senator and all that.
Well, I don't think that she's. You know, first off, all of this super PAC money could potentially go elsewhere. Now, who knows? But, I mean, you know, she's, for all the reasons that I don't particularly care for her as a candidate for president, as a Democrat, she's not stupid.
Right,
It would not at all shock me if she doesn't run. I think she probably will. But I wouldn't be surprised if she was like, I don't really think I want to.
Yeah. That would be the smart move, Hillary.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be floored if it did.
I actually do think that's what's going to happen.
You think that's what's going to happen?
Yeah, because I just... it's too First of all, the country does not want it. I mean, you hear the only Republican now who's available to run for president is Jeb Bush, and the country's not ready for that. They're not ready for her.
Well, and we talked about that, too. I mean, if it ends up being Hillary versus Jeb Bush, I mean, that is prime time for someone who is neither of those two people. Yeah, and insanity, yes.
Yeah, that's a third party year, for sure.
You know, there's history with this all, and, you know, I still don't believe that we're into becoming a monarchy type situation, and I think
the Bush and the Clinton
people have played themselves out, and I don't think their children or anybody can ever do it again.
Yeah.
And so
one hopes.
Step out of it.
Yeah. You
know? So longer this goes on, the more annoyed I am, even at the thought of Chelsea being involved in politics.
I know, right?
Well, and I don't think she will be. I think she will be.
I think she'll, but
Carolyn Kennedy is kind of involved in politics.
Yeah, true.
But I don't think in the way that her parents were involved in politics.
Yeah.
But it just is not. There's no reason for it. We live in a country with 300 million people. Do we have to just keep voting the same people?
Yeah.
A question we ask all the time.
yeah.
Anyway, there was a sort of interesting article in Politico this week
about
Kalamazoo, Michigan, a dying town, a dying Rust Belt town, very close to Detroit, facing a lot of the similar issues, where the school superintendent recently announced that a bunch of donors basically got together, people who had sort of some, I guess, connection to Kalamazoo, got together and agreed that they would give a full ride to any student who went to the Kalamazoo Public Schools to any Michigan public university, which is an experiment that they're trying because Kalamazoo's been losing population.
Right.
And they have
it's
been...
because they've been losing all these manufacturing jobs.
Because they've been losing manufacturing jobs. Right. Exactly. It's sort of the classic dying Rust Belt town syndrome.
Right.
But because of that, the poverty rate is like twice the national poverty rate. And they've sort of been wondering how you rescue a city in that circumstance.
Yeah.
And so a bunch of people, because Kalamazoo used to be sort of like a thriving town with a ridiculous name.
Yeah.
That was what it was famous for, was having a ridiculous name and being a town.
sure.
But there was money there because there were jobs, you know, there was manufacturing jobs there. And I think that there was some sort of like software type, there was some other kind of company that was connected to Kalamazoo.
Sure.
In any case, this is sort of like their urban renewal project that they're undertaking there. And then, you know, everyone's super into it. Everyone is sort of predicting that it will probably be a huge success because it will take all of these people who will have had really no future without, you know, wouldn't have been able to pay for college, wouldn't have necessarily gone. It will give the students in the public schools there, which are losing population dramatically as well. And in Michigan, your funding is based on how many students you have. So the schools have lost a lot of funding because of that. It will take a lot of the students and sort of give them something to succeed for. And then, you know, hopefully that some of that success gets invested back in Kalamazoo and maybe other parts of Michigan that are falling apart.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, college graduates earn more money than non-college graduates. And these will be people who will have an incentive to be thankful to Kalamazoo for being so generous to them.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, if you've gone since kindergarten to the Kalamazoo Public Schools, you're going to get a full ride. And then you'll get a partial ride if you enrolled in the Kalamazoo Public Schools before your freshman year of high school. And it's regardless of GPA, regardless of how much money your family has or anything like that, it's everybody, which is sort of a fascinating experiment.
Yeah.
Because I think what they will find is that it's a great idea
that
everyone should be doing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, I think that's a good deal in Michigan where they have really good public universities.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That's not just some crap state.
Right.
It's not Mississippi or some nonsense where
right.
people have to be in Mississippi to do it. Like, if you can go to a public university in Michigan, then you're in good shape.
Yep.
Michigan has good schools.
Yeah.
So this is a sort of exciting thing that maybe we'll sort of get some insight into what it's like in a world where people don't have just huge crushing debt when they graduate and can just do things.
I mean, there's so many reasons why this is a good idea.
Well,
I mean, we could do a whole podcast about this, but yeah, you're right. I mean, besides, you know, debt. I mean, really, debt is the leader of all of these things.
Debt, but
I mean,
in like, this when town, not even, because no, it's not even an mean, issue of debt in this town. It's an issue of getting kids to go to college in the first place. Getting kids to go,
but I mean, I think that you're, you know,
debt but this is, will be an interesting...
Debt is sort of what leads to, you know, all of the issues post-college, yes, in the sense that sort of like, you know, people aren't able to sort of like do what they want. They have to, you know, they can't, they don't have money to spend. They can't,
right, they can't take risks.
They can't take risks. They can't sort of innovate. We've talked about this in right, a similar about way that. To...
A few weeks when ago, we talked or about last it week,
with Obamacare, basically, yeah, how this that sort of allows people to not have to take jobs that they don't want to, you know, ensure that they have health care.
Exactly,
this is does a similar thing, and I think that you're going to find that, and I think that they're absolutely right that they're going to find that, you know, people want to give back to their community who sort of
who feel like they benefited from being part of that community.
Yeah,
that's so. Anyway, I'm super excited to see how this all. Yeah, plays out.
It'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting also just because Michigan and Indiana and a lot of states in that area have towns like this that are,
oh, yeah,
that are
sure,
not, you know, Gary, Indiana is a little farther gone than, yeah, Kalamazoo, but it's the same, yeah, problem. Detroit is the same problem. All of, yeah, all of those dying Rust Belt towns are facing the same problem,
yeah,
which is what you do when the factory leaves.
Yep.
And so this, it will be really interesting to see if there's a way that they can turn the situation around by sort of finding, making the kids from the community figure out a creative way, yeah, to solve it after they've educated them, basically.
Yeah.
Because I think they probably could. Kalamazoo was apparently quite nice at one point.
I'm sure.
I've never been there, nor do I care to go there. Because
I bet
it's
trees
Michigan
were just at the right height. Yeah. Right?
The perfect Michigan tree height.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney would have been so proud.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's... Exciting. We're excited, yeah, to see what happens with that.
Okay. Scandal at the White House.
Scandal at the White House this week. Oh, my God.
Man. So the Boston Red Sox were at the White House because they won the World Series.
Yeah. It's a thing you get to do.
So, and David Ortiz, who was, I think, the MVP of the World Series. Or
fancy Red Sox player.
Right. Took a selfie with the president.
Like you do.
Which is what you do.
Yeah.
And it turns out it was a big stunt from Samsung,
yeah,
who like assigned him to do this, basically, like, well, either the day of or the day before.
He contracts with Samsung to do basically like viral marketing kind of
right, but
things
he had,
for them.
But he had only contracted to do that with him, like, basically like very recently.
Yes,
because
it was a very recent.
It was they knew that he was going to be at the, yeah, White House, obviously, so it was like it came up. So the White House doesn't ever use, you know, they don't use the president's image to
promote
sell
brands.
Products.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what they're up to over there. So they were pissed as, yeah, soon as they found out that, like, that's what was going on. So it might be leading to the White House being a selfie-free zone.
Yeah, you might not be able to take
no
a
more
picture
selfies
with the
president. Can you imagine how angry that... Who was that that woman at the Nelson Mandela Memorial who was, like, the leader of some, like, random
like
country?
Finland or something?
Finland or something?
Yeah, somewhere.
At least she got in just in time.
Thank God.
Right?
Well, and maybe if you're a foreign leader, a foreign dignitary of some,
right,
sort at a
she's
major
not selling
event,
anything, presumably.
Right. We don't know. We couldn't possibly know. But maybe this is going to be causing a scandal at events where he has to be around other dignitaries and he has to be like, yeah, oh, sorry, no, I don't do selfies.
It does seem like a little, I mean, this whole situation does seem like a little low, sort of.
Yes.
I mean, right?
Like, don't.
Come on.
Do that.
Like, David Ortiz also, I mean, I realize he's probably not a genius, but I mean, like, he should have seen that
he's
that
an
was
American,
like, not,
though. He could have, right, just known that.
Like, don't
you
do
don't
that.
Have to be a genius,
like,
to know that.
Don't try and trick the president. Like,
no, that's after he's invited you to his house.
It's a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. Yeah. Oh, this is the kind of thing I would expect, though, from a Red Sox player. So it's fine.
Oh, right. Two New Yorkers here.
Well, I'm sure my mom doesn't care at all.
I don't. I kind of like the Red Sox because they're wild guys.
Oh, God.
Well, they're wild guys.
They are.
Yeah. I just don't like the Red Sox because I think Red Sox fans are kind of mean.
Oh.
That's a thing that comes up in college when the, sure, Yankees and the Red Sox are involved in a World Series,
yeah,
type situation.
Yeah.
The Red Sox fans get mean. Huh? So that's my only real tie to that. In final news, the most hilarious thing in the history of the world was announced, or it's not announced. We found out that the most hilarious thing in the history of the world,
right,
had been happening
this
between 2009 and 2012.
I always know like what we're collectively most excited about, because it's when we start our document, like in the week where we put all of our stories on, like there will always be like one story like that we will see where we're like, oh, we have to start the document where we have to start
exactly
taking notes on the stories.
Yeah.
And like simultaneously, you and I like started our Google document and like had this story on it. It wasn't any of the more important stories. No. It was this story I was like, Lila's gonna love this. She did because she was.
I was on it.
She was on it. Yeah. She was beating me to the punch.
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
This is what happened. So the United States Agency for International Development, which is USAID, between 2009 and 2012, created this fake Twitter-style social media platform called Zunzunio.
As a big ploy to like take down
the Cuban government. Basically, they were trying to Arab Spring their way out of, you know, into a Cuban revolution.
Yeah, they wanted a Cuban Spring.
That's
what they said.
Yeah, that's. So in any case, they decided that they were going to sneakily, once it had enough users, they were going to start first with messages about soccer and music and hurricanes and things that Cubans care about. And then they were going to sort of secretly start sneaking political messages in to try to foment revolution in Cuba. This is a questionable strategy for a number of reasons in Cuba. One being that a lot of people don't have internet access.
They don't.
So
that's why it was text message based.
Yeah, it was
basically there was like some plant in like some high level operative in Cuba who like worked for their national cell phone company. And of course, it couldn't get out that the United States was running this.
Right.
So they were using like a bunch of like companies that were like, you know, front companies that were like all over the world. So like this guy in Cuba who worked for the national cell phone company gave like a half a million phone numbers to like some guy who worked at this company in Spain, basically. And they were also using some company in the Cayman Islands. And so there was like this big event in Cuba that was like this concert that they were having. It was like the biggest event since the Pope had come like 10 years ago or something like that.
Right.
And so they text messaged like a half a million people, basically, like using all of their numbers, like about this like big concert that was like some Colombian rock star, basically. Yeah. And so, and they hired some guy who was like a well-known like Cuban like comedian, basically, to like poll people about like, you know, this concert that was happening, like what they thought about it and whether they were excited and things like that. And they were using this Zunzunio, like where they were text messaging everybody to like get people like involved in this. And then that's how they sort of like got them engaged with this platform.
Because ostensibly it had to be a social Twitter
platform. Yeah. It had to be a social thing where they could like get all of these people engaged, but it sort of just didn't
work. There are numerous obstacles to getting something like this off the ground. One being that this was an entirely suspect strategy.
Completely crazy.
In Cuba, even cell phones are not as common as they are here. So even, like, getting young people engaged in this kind of platform was already sort of tricky business in a place where cell phone technology is a relatively recent thing. It's very expensive. It's not something that everyone has access to. And also, I mean, just sort of the larger issue of sort of how they were going to turn a satirical conversation about a Colombian rock star into a political conversation about fomenting revolution was a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah.
So much of a mystery that they had to close up shop before it got to that point.
The interesting thing about this is that it was fairly secret to basically everyone. USAID was doing this. This is not the type of thing that they normally get involved in. Like, I mean, they're responsible for, you know, getting aid to countries. Like, that's what they do. This seems like the CIA would be doing.
Nonsense.
This is like, you know, some foreign intelligence, like, going on here. Like, that is not. And even, I think, there was, like, who was I telling you that? Oh, Patrick Leahy, I think, who, like, oversees whatever committee in the Senate oversees U.S. aid. He didn't even know about this.
No.
And he was quoted as saying, like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard or something like that.
And on top of being just, like, ridiculous, it's really, like, nefarious.
I know.
Because this, like, is intervening
this
in
something
the...
That,
this is... You don't intervene.
This is something
into
that the president signs off on, basically. Yeah, like, not that just not like some even, rogue
this,
organization decides
this,
that they're going to do
this
by themselves.
If this was anywhere but Cuba, this would have been totally destroyed by the rest of the world. Like, this intervening into the internal affairs of another nation in using secret means like that is totally illegal. You can't do that. That's crazy. If this had been going on in, like, Germany or somewhere like that, like,
oh my God,
Europe would have shut us down. Like,
I was gonna say,
nobody's
that's,
business.
That's like a
that's
no-no.
War. That's
a, that's
a war.
That's
yeah.
When...
No, the only reason they got away with this at all was that it was Cuba. It's weird that USAID took this role
yeah.
because you would hope an aid organization wouldn't be playing into like secret nefarious plans to overthrow governments. Like, but even if the U.S. government was trying to do this, like, this is crazy. And at what point was someone not like, you know what? This seems a little bit like we're trying to overthrow another government. We're trying to take a sovereign nation and overthrow their government. That doesn't seem like something we can do legally.
No.
We should step back. No, yeah. Instead they just stopped because it wasn't working.
Yeah.
It was like a dumb idea that was also right. evil.
They only ever got, I think, 40,000 people. And yeah, it just well, sort of, the funding for it ran out. And
people?
It's like, it was never going to be a
thing. In a nation with basic cell technology and no internet access and
right.
like, you know, like, I don't know where they thought, like, it was, I mean, I see where the idea came from. It was,
sure.
you know, they were trying to Arab Spring their way into
yeah.
a new Cuban government. I don't know why they're still focused on this.
Yeah.
Like, this has not been working, their strategy to overthrow the Cuban government. So, like, maybe it's time to just admit
right.
a loss. Be like, okay, it's a tiny island that we don't care about, so it's fine. And move on with your lives. But even
right.
if you're not, like, to sort of think that, like, you're going to be able to take a sort of cultural touchstone of, you know, our world and kind of like transplant it to a place that
right.
didn't even have the technology to have an internet-based Twitter-style
right.
news.
Well, and I don't know.
If they're not using Twitter, then you don't have, then
well,
you
exactly.
haven't invented the right
well,
technology.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and I don't, you know, I've not been to Cuba, but I just, you know, assume that the Cuban people are not entirely stupid.
No,
I just,
but you just have
I'm,
to make that assumption.
I'm curious as to how they were going to get from text messages updating Cubans about soccer scores to
well,
convincing
also,
them
Cubans
to overthrow the government.
Are very savvy about political propaganda. They hear a lot of it themselves,
sure.
obviously, because the Cuban government is also a great generator of propaganda. But communist nations love propaganda. And one of the things that they make sure is that everyone in Cuba can recognize U.S. government propaganda.
Right.
They're not, they don't. When you go to Cuba and you're like, how can you, you know, people ask a lot there, like, sort of, how do you handle the sort of relentless propaganda that's coming from the government? Every billboard in Cuba is government propaganda.
Yeah.
And my sort of like, I think the most sort of like thoughtful thing that someone ever said to me there was like, do you think that your love of democracy is not propaganda also?
Right.
Like, is what you believe to be true about what makes the best government not based on propaganda that you learned in American schools and
sure.
talk about as Americans? Like, we can believe that we're right. That's fine. But like, we sort of have to acknowledge to some extent that we're also sort of inundated with our own
yeah,
kind of propaganda.
We bought into it. Right, right sure.
We
yeah.
bought
but
into
also,
our own propaganda. And
Cubans can read.
Well, exactly. That's,
right.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. That Cubans are savvy about propaganda. This
yeah.
would have been a really hard transition to make.
Yeah.
And the entire country is educated. So
yeah.
you can't,
very
it's not
well
it's not like going to the Tea Party demographic and then being like, hey guys, we have a
right.
dumb idea that we want to sell you that we're going to make sound really simple. Like,
right.
you can't do that in Cuba.
No.
Everything was terrible. This whole plan was a mess.
But brilliant.
But brilliant.
A brilliant mess.
Do more
a beautiful
of that.
Disaster, if you will.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's the news. We're going to be back next week, like
yep.
we are on all the weeks. And we'll have more news then.
Yeah. Thanks, Carla.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for inviting me.
Bye.